Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. This is Travis Hornsby. Today we're going to be talking about your coronavirus stories. We did a survey of 20-something thousand people that are on our email list, and we had about 3,000 of you fill that survey out, so thank you so much. And we did a similar survey 30 days prior to that in mid-March when this coronavirus stuff all started kind of hitting the fan all at once. So it's really fascinating to see the change in what's been going on with the economy just from mid-March to mid-April, just to see kind of just the mountains that have gone up and been raised. It's just such a different world. So excited to share some of those results of that survey with you and just kind of talk through some of that. Just also just to talk some about your story. Some of the things that you're saying are just really kind of extraordinary what you're going through. So I thought I would read some of my favorite comments in that survey for the show today. And then also we're going to answer at least one listener question, and we're going to discuss the new PPP program, the PPP like refunding bill, I guess you could call it that. Congress just passed almost a $500 billion kind of round 3.5, I think is what people are calling it. So we'll talk about the PPP program and different things you might want to consider for that program in terms of whether or not you should be applying for that if you missed out on the first round. So first, we have a question from a listener.
Hi, Travis. This is Natalie. I'm a physician in California. I've been tracking how my student loan servicer has been following the CARES Act provisions. And so far, my loan balance keeps going up. Interest keeps accruing. They even bumped up my interest rate because auto pay has been turned off. I have seen some screenshots of Navient, and they've all adjusted their interest rates down to zero. Should I be concerned or should I wait this out? I'm used to not really expecting much from my servicer. Thanks.
Natalie's asking, what about this servicer that she has that's not seemingly doing the right thing in terms of the CARES Act, right? Because the CARES Act says this, you're going to have student loans paused from March 13th to September 30th if they're owned by the federal government. So you're going to have zero interest and zero required payments. And if you were signed up for an income-driven plan as of March 13th, then any period in between those two dates would count towards any forgiveness program you'd otherwise normally qualify for, which means that you'd qualify for pay-as-you-earn, revised pay-as-you-earn if you're pursuing a 20 or 25-year forgiveness path in the private sector. Additionally, you'd qualify for public service loan forgiveness if, of course, you're working full-time at a not-for-profit or government employer that qualifies normally. So those are the rules. And then obviously interest is also suspended on top of that. And so there's some concern about whether or not her loans are actually truly not accruing any interest. So what I would say to her about that is, first off, there's still servicers that are catching up. So that's the first statement is even now, 30 days later, after the national coronavirus thing kind of hit the fan March 13th, when President Trump had that press conference, they're still trying to implement everything. So I guess my first reaction would be don't panic. But my second reaction would be this. A whole lot of people, about 9 million people, were left out of the CARES Act for student loan benefits. So who are these 9 million people? They're people who have Perkins loans. They're folks who have FFEL loans from before 2010, especially FFEL loans, or really I should say specifically FFEL loans that are owned by commercial lenders. So these kind of loans are basically as part of the government guaranteed student loan program before 2010. So some FFEL student loans are owned by the Department of Education, and some of them are owned by a private entity. Now, the best way to figure this out is to go into the studentaid.gov website and go ahead and log in and then click on, I think it's My Aid or My Data. And you're basically trying to do the My Data download. So you're trying to get to that link on studentaid.gov. And if you click that link, it's going to give you a TXT file that looks like it is from some sort of, I don't know, Cold War missile program or something. It's the most terrible, scary looking thing ever. I mean, it's so long. It's gobbledygook. If you're looking for whether or not you have loans that are owned by a commercial lender, though, that's the only way that I know of where you can figure that out easily. So you go into that TXT file. And then you look through the file and you look and see who is the loan contact or the loan contact organization. And if that's got a like something, something Inc. next to it, then that's going to be a commercially held entity. The other route, of course, is to hire us because we can figure this out very easily for you. You know, if you do have loans from before 2010 and you're concerned about this at all, I think it would be very important to hire us simply because we will very easily pay for the cost of our consult by confirming this, that you do not have qualifying loans, or maybe you do have qualifying loans and we're just giving you peace of mind. I mean, that's probably worth a few $100 too, right? But I think that the main benefit is making sure that you should be consolidating or not, depending on whether or not you have some of these FFEL commercial loans. So people that have direct loans owned by the Department of Education, you don't have anything to worry about. The other thing that CARES Act leaves out is it leaves out anybody with Department of Health student loans, which is actually quite a few people. So Department of Health student loans are typically offered to dentists, physicians, and some other people by their medical or dental schools who think that they're doing you a favor by giving you a 5% student loan that has interest deferred for, you know, the time you're in school and then for the grace period after. But what it really does is it screws you over, because it basically means that if you don't work with a student loan consultant like us, you're going to make a mistake because you're not going to probably consolidate those Department of Health loans. These are usually held by this company called Heartland ECSI. And if you don't consolidate those, then what you're going to do is pay them back as if they're a private loan when they are in fact not really a private loan. They're a Department of Health loan. And hilariously or stupidly, you know, you pick the word, these loans do not show up on the NSLDS or studentaid.gov websites because the Department of Education does not communicate to the Department of Health. And for some reason, Congress allows the student loan programs to be the majority. The biggest one, obviously, is with the Department of Health, but they also have this big loan program through the Department of Education and Department of Health. Basically, both of them have their own student loan programs, and the Department of Health student loan program is a lot smaller, but we see it a lot for our clients just because we work with a lot of professionals, right? So it's a little bit maybe longer of an answer than our listener wanted, but but I think it's real important, because if you do have direct loans, as long as you're signed up for an income-driven plan on or before March 13th, then you're good. And then also we're telling people to claim your refund. You know, if you made a payment after that date, get the money back. There's no point in putting it towards the loans. A lot of people are like, well, I want to pay off my loans. I want to make extra progress on my loans right now because there's 0% interest. And to that, I'd say fine, but how confident are you that you're going to still have a job at the end of all this? You know, how confident are you that you're not going to have a 30% pay cut? Because all these academic institutions, you know, for physicians, you know, that historically have been very, very solid about paying people, they're pleading poverty. And, you know, despite their multi-billion dollar endowments, they're pleading poverty, and they're saying that they're going to cut everybody's wages, you know, 10 to 30% for a lot of these academic physician positions that already pay like 10th percentile incomes. And then obviously private practices are impacted even worse because you can't do the procedures in a lot of cases. So you might have had a much steeper drop than that in income. So yeah, sure, if you're working for like the US government or something, then make some extra payments on your loans right now for federal student loans. But then again, you know, my argument there would be, why haven't you optimized for public service loan forgiveness, right? I just think that people are underestimating the risk here. I'll give you two scenarios. One is, you know, the economy really tanks because we think we have it under control and we don't. And then you would love to have some extra cash that had not gone to paying a bunch of debt down. If the economy tanked really hard, you'd probably like to have more cash savings too. Now, if the economy soars, then in that scenario, you'd probably rather have invested a lot of money. You know, you probably would have rather played a wait and see game. So I'm not saying that it's bad to pay down your loans if your eventual plan is to refinance right now because you do have 0% on your federal student loans. I'm not saying that's a bad plan. I'm just saying that, like, don't get suckered into thinking that it's a great plan. You do need to still think about this stuff and decide, like, what's smart to do and what's not smart to do. And I think a lot of people are sort of just rushing to judgment on based off of a couple like funny articles they saw online or something. Like, this stuff is a lot more complicated than you think it is. I'm sorry, but it is. That's why I think that you need to pay attention to this stuff, because like, if you're a borrower that had loans from before 2010, you could easily cost yourself a couple $1,000s if you mess up this interest freeze. We have a lot of readers that have saved like $3,000 to $5,000 who asked for refunds on their student loan payments with that payment after March 13th that they could ask for a refund for. You know, so we're trying to keep you informed during this crazy time. I think another thing that is useful to think about is this PPP program. So I promise you I would talk about this, right? So there's another program called EIDL, which is the, I think it's the economic injury disaster loan, something like that. In general, if you have a business, this PPP program is the one you want to focus on. You know, the EIDL program, I think, is better for maybe solopreneurs or people like that. But the PPP program, the Paycheck Protection Program, so this program was an absolute disaster. It kind of seemed like it was going to be a train wreck just from the very beginning, because it was a $350 billion program, but by Congress putting a very specific price tag on it, they basically caused people to rush to apply, right? You created this situation where everybody wants to sort of rush for the entrance to get their application in as fast as possible, or else they're going to lose the money. There's been a lot of big businesses that got preferential treatment during the PPP program. So there's a lot of stuff about, you know, for example, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, I can't even say the name, and then Shake Shack and Potbelly Restaurant Group, like a bunch of big, big businesses applied for this because, you know, if you think about it, a lot of people were mad, but it's kind of like, I mean, hate the incompetence of Congress. Don't hate the people that are exercising their fiduciary duty to shareholders, right? Like if I'm running a company and I have the ability to apply for a $10 million grant to keep my workers employed and to help survive the worst recession since, you know, maybe ever since the Great Depression, you would do that if you're sitting in those seats. I mean, I think that that's kind of the way I like to think through these kind of things is like, I understand the anger. This is not who was intended to apply for these loans. But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, the game's unfair. Like, sorry, unpopular opinion there. But yeah, the game is rigged. And so it's just kind of like, focus on what you can control. Because if you let your energy be wasted on getting upset about things you can't control, it's just not going to help anything. Worry about the things that you can control. Worry about what you can do. And sometimes it just makes your blood boil just thinking like, golly, like why are these big giant corporations getting all this relief money when maybe you're a small business owner and you desperately need this relief money? I even saw a really interesting article looking at how some business owners are actually getting blowback, especially from lower wage employees, because in a lot of cases with unemployment benefits, you get an extra $600 per week if you're unemployed right now over and above whatever the normal pay rate is. So that means like in a low wage state like Florida or Mississippi, you can make $40,000 for unemployment if you lose your job, even if you made anything below that. So there's a lot of people right now that are making more money on unemployment than they would have normally working. And they did that on purpose to try to get the money out fast, to try to help people's jobs. So I get why they did it. And then, you know, in other places like Washington State, you can make up to $60,000, you know, unemployed. Why does that matter? Well, some business owners that are applying for the PPP, they're actually getting a lot of blowback from their employees because the employees are kind of, you know, again, like this program ended up randomly for 4 months, giving some people much higher wages than they would normally be earning. And so then the employers are trying to keep people on the job. So then you, the ones that do get the PPP loans, some of the people are looking at that. And the employees are kind of upset because they don't want to be paid their same wage when there's this special program out there that can pay them a lot more, right? I mean, you would have that same view, right? If you're making, you know, say $25,000 an hour as a lower wage employee and you have this unemployment program that can pay you $40,000 annualized for 4 months, I mean, a lot of people are going to prefer that. So this PPP program just kind of ended up being a giant mess. And I think that that's pretty, it's pretty fascinating just because here's the real question. Should you apply for it? In our survey, basically we asked the business owners like who got it. And only about 15% of the people I think said that they were approved. So that's a pretty small sample. What do you think? Like, what is the purpose of it? The purpose is you're replacing 2 months of your employees' wages, essentially. You have to use at least 75% of the funds for payroll. So by the time this episode releases, the PPP round two will be, people will be applying like crazy. Maybe you will have gotten something in front of you that you can sign to accept the money. We're telling people they should accept it because basically what it is, it's a grant. If you use it on employee payroll, it turns into a grant. Now you might say, well, why am I going to take out money and take that risk of taking on a loan to pay my people if I'm shut, my dental office is closed, if my practice isn't seeing anybody, if I can't have anybody in the office working, right? I get what you're saying about that. And so I think that, you know, if you're very risk averse, if most of all of your employees are very low wage employees, then I think that, okay, like maybe you don't take the PPP loan because they might get more money with unemployment and they might be more grateful for that. But if you have employees making in that like 50K to 100K range in a state with not great unemployment benefits, then you're really helping these people by taking this PPP loan to keep people employed. So I don't know. That's kind of a deep dive, maybe way too much for some of you out there that are not business owners. Obviously, this is maybe less relevant, but these are the kind of questions that business owners are being faced with right now, and it's pretty stressful. Having to make the call as a business owner of like, do you cut people's wages because your revenues are way down? Do you dig deep into your pocket and take huge losses to keep people employed? I mean, you can do that for a time, but you can't do it for very long. And then, you know, do you accept this PPP program with the difficulty it's taken in applying and just all the problems with it? There's no easy answers here right now for business owners. So if you're a business owner, let me just say this, right? Survive. If you can survive through this period, things will be fine. How long will we need to survive? I mean, it seems like you won't need to survive any longer than 18 months. I don't think that the American people will necessarily, according to our research, according to the survey that we did, I don't think that people will tolerate a total shutdown for an indefinite period of time. We're seeing a lot of cracks in people's willingness to keep the economy closed in our survey, which is something that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in today's episode. I want to say this like in the most honest, just this is the data. Like this is not saying that one thing is right versus another right. I have a physician wife that I do not want exposed to coronavirus. That said, we're just going to talk about this data and you can draw your own conclusions. All right. And now for some of the survey findings. I think this was particularly interesting looking at different professions and support for, you know, reopening the economy and how fast that you all thought that should happen. Overall, people were very responsible with their answers. About 46% of people said we should keep the economy closed for as long as it takes, you know, until this crisis is behind us. So very patient approach. But what we found is if you've lost your income completely, then you're 44% more likely to want the economic shutdown to end in 2 months or less. And this was really regardless of risk of COVID-19 exposure or also the risk that you would be a big part in kind of causing exposure for other people too, right? I mean, there's really two risks with COVID-19 going back to work. One is that you would get sick yourself and transmit that to your family. Another risk is that you would transmit it from patient to patient or customer to customer and then be a vector for getting other people infected. Both of those things are risks. And I thought it was really, really fascinating to see just how powerful that effect was. And another interesting thing too that we saw was professions that have had income cuts but not mass layoffs were very supportive, more supportive than average of keeping the economy shut down for as long as it takes. So for example, physicians, pharmacists, you know, professions that have not really faced much of an income total loss, right? A lot of those folks have faced income losses, but just not mass layoffs like in optometry and dentistry. Those fields that have experienced the mass layoffs are basically not willing to keep the economy closed on average. Like the majority opinion is that it should reopen like fairly quickly. Now, even the really badly affected professions are not saying, let's open it up in a week. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that people's like typical answer of like how much longer we can keep going with this is a lot shorter when people lose their jobs completely. So that will be really interesting to monitor going forward. Is this going to be a trend where you're going to see professionals be in general supportive of social distancing policies and flattening the curve and keeping the economy shut down and doing this extreme quarantine that we're all going through right now? But it seems like based off of this data, I don't think that optometrists and dentists are necessarily like a lot more conservative or something than physicians and pharmacists. So I think that that's probably fair to say that's independent of political views from our survey that we did. So I really would think that what we would see is if you saw mass layoffs of physicians, especially physicians in elective fields of work, then I think that you would start to see a whole lot of physicians basically say, you know what, I'm willing to take the risk again. And again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what the data seems to be suggesting. Now, we found unbelievable differences between professions in this survey that we did. Dentists, 56% of you are not getting income at all. For physicians, that number was 1%. So physicians, about 20% of you have faced a very large income loss. There is different kinds of pain that everyone's experiencing, but some people are being just absolutely obliterated with their professions, and some people are not that affected, like government employees were very unaffected by this, you know, and then also other professions like lawyers, you know, not that affected. But then some professions were more affected than I thought they would be. So for example, mid-level providers seem to be getting hammered pretty hard compared to physicians, at least, you know, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs. Hospitals are looking at cost centers and they're kind of deciding who to keep and who to try to save money on. And, you know, I think a lot of anecdotal stuff that we saw suggested that a lot of these employers are kind of saying, well, maybe we can just lay off a lot of the mid-level providers because they'll have a higher percentage of their incomes replaced by unemployment. Whereas with the physicians, we want to keep these people on staff in case we do have a surge of COVID patients, but we're going to cut their incomes because also, you know, physicians get paid a lot and they're a big cost center. If you're not bringing in revenues, suddenly people are really concerned. I have a personal opinion about this. I think that it's kind of interesting that these hospitals are cutting people's pay so much because they have massive endowments, something that people don't really realize. A lot of these academic medical centers have multi-billion dollar endowments that come because they're making huge profits from their not-for-profit status. They don't have to pay taxes. You know, healthcare has gone through this massive consolidation, so hospital systems have gotten even bigger and even more profitable. It's kind of interesting to see how businesslike they really are, right? I think it's kind of amusing that these hospitals are not-for-profits. I don't think they really are. If you talk to most physicians, I think people can probably on average back me up on that it seems like with the mass numbers of hospital administrators and other people like that, it's just really interesting to see how much it really is all about the bottom line during this crisis for a lot of these hospitals. Let me get off my high horse there. So the number of people reporting unchanged pay, the pharmacists actually were number one. 88% of pharmacists reported unchanged pay since the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak. Here's one quote from a listener that I thought was kind of explained why this is. So they said that the pharmacy was incredibly busy at the beginning of the pandemic, but prescriptions have slowed greatly. By this time on a Friday, I'm typically in my 300 to 400th prescription, and I've now yet to hit 200 today. This person says, I certainly wouldn't have time to do this survey if it was a couple weeks ago. Haha, that's kind of funny. I mean, it seems like pharmacists are doing okay, but you're starting to see this slowdown in activity. 78% of physicians reported unchanged pay. So that means, you know, a significant amount has gotten big income cuts. I'm going to read you quite a few, I guess, different responses from different people's professions that listen to this podcast. I want to kind of just give you a little bit of a flavor of what's going on out there. And I think you'll enjoy hearing kind of what it's like in different professions and just to see if this is fitting with what you're going through when hopefully you might hear your profession. I couldn't read all of them, obviously. That would take a while, but I'm just picking a couple here. This one person who's a business person says, I'm an independent contractor and I'm very confused about where I'm going to replace my lost income. Do I go unemployment? Do I go PPP? What do I do? This practice owner that I work for got PPP and was approved, but I'm a contractor and I don't qualify because he wasn't allowed to include me in payroll. So should I pursue my own PPP separately? She also mentions the state of Florida denied her unemployment claim and their system's not yet set up to reflect that the CARES Act expands unemployment to cover independent contractors. So one thing I'll tell you is Florida right now is in our survey, they were doing so bad with unemployment claims. There was a lot of states that were not doing great, but Florida, only 1% of Floridians said that they were getting unemployment benefits and 15% of people in our survey approximately said they lost their jobs in Florida. Hopefully that's an issue that'll get fixed for that person. And then also her question, do I need to apply for the PPP? Yes. If you're an independent contractor, you need to apply for the PPP because it's going to cover 2 months of your payroll. So you should definitely do this. I suggest doing PayPal. PayPal will allow you to just type PayPal PPP because they're the easiest and they've seemingly had a lot of success approving some of my friends who are independent contractors. You just have to submit their Excel payroll calculator, which is going to figure out what your loan amount should be for. And then they also ask for your 1040 Schedule C. So that's where they show your net profit as an independent contractor. And that's the number that they're going to use to verify your claim. So you should definitely do this to apply for PPP as an independent contractor. And just for that person, I would just preach patience. Like if you can just survive another 30 days, I think the unemployment stuff in Florida will start to work itself out. Veterinarian says, I do make production only, so it affects my pay. Clients right now can't afford to get care they usually would. We're still open as an ER-only clinic. So we're seeing, you know, surprisingly, people are still taking care of their pets. I think that like the psychological toll of this has caused people to really value their pets. Like, you know, anecdotally, we see people walking their dogs a whole lot more than usual, it seems. You know, people have bought a ton of pets and puppies. Like, there's huge demand for that right now. So it doesn't surprise me too much that veterinarians are a little bit sheltered from this, but obviously their income is starting to get impacted too, like everyone. A psychologist says, a lot of my time and energy at my group practice has been devoted to making sure insurance companies will reimburse me for telehealth. This is very stressful, and I really have a lot better things I could be doing with my time than trying to talk to these insurance companies and try to sort through the mess. That makes sense. We had a whole lot of dentists share their thoughts on something. One dentist said that I'm making a tenth of what I used to make before. This is very stressful as I'm still getting compensated from some of the older payments from insurance companies. So I don't know if I can apply for unemployment yet. Unemployment is taking a while for me to get approved for. And also we don't qualify for a stimulus check. And the PPP doesn't really help us because we can't spend most of the money on things like practice loans and other bills that we have. So yeah, a lot of dentists are going through a lot. Another dentist says, the question on when the country should reopen is complex. This is the dentist saying this. I would certainly hope it doesn't continue in this manner much longer, as us dentists are getting hammered by this. A chiropractor kind of mentioned dentists in their comment. This chiropractor says, it's been interesting for me to see what has been defined as essential. As a chiropractor working in a medical office building with several other dentists that are currently closed, it's reaffirming to me what I'm doing and my stability as a profession. I was a little surprised to see that more chiropractors' incomes haven't been severely impacted in our survey. I mean, they certainly seem like a lot have been pretty significantly impacted. I think that what this is kind of revealing is some professions lobbied pretty hard to be deemed essential, and others got excluded from that definition of essential. And this is really a state-by-state thing, because we're taking this state-by-state approach to dealing with this. I think that this person's probably just living in a particular state, with my guess is maybe chiropractors had a good voice in the legislature and were able to get declared essential so that they could stay open. But other people in our survey, they were chiropractors, that wasn't the case. A nurse says, this is actually a spouse of a nurse. The spouse says, my wife is a nurse and has been working nonstop. While we're bringing in more money, we're a lot more stressed out. This really makes sense. A couple more for you. Occupational therapist says, I work for public schools and I'm trying to provide occupational therapy virtually while taking care of a child. That says, I'm still employed working at a rehab center, but I've stopped working there because of my fear that I'm going to contract the virus. So I'm not receiving extra income there. That's really pretty interesting. I think this person also mentions that she's married to a police officer, but all of his overtime is canceled because there's no events in town. I didn't really think about that, but that makes sense that even if you're, you know, a police officer, you think that your income is fine. No, your income could be pretty affected too. This is interesting. So a musician says that my spouse and I teach private music lessons and we moved our studio online. It's been a big learning experience, but we've gained online students since the start of the pandemic. So it's a silver lining. So that's good. That's some good news. The physician here says, our corporate-owned company is trying to limit all surgeries to preserve PPE, but is also pressuring us about how can we get more income? How do we handle the cognitive dissonance? That's a great, that's something that unfortunately physicians go through all the time dealing with administrators, and I think that's why physicians, like your average physician, just like hates hospital administrators, just because the business department is always asking these kind of questions. It's like, make more money, but do it cheaper and like have less costs. And they tell you to like treat patients the right way. Like, you know, don't be too aggressive with your treatment plans, but also give us more surgeries, right? It's like they talk out of both sides of their mouth. So it's seeming like this crisis has not really changed that. This PA says, I'm a physician assistant that works part-time. I've only been doing a few hours of telemedicine at home. I work with a physician and there's not the volume of patients for us both to be there. So I think that's kind of showing you some of the pain of the mid-level providers out there. Just not being able to have that normal income stream coming in. And then frankly, maybe not looked after as well by employers, just because they maybe say you're important, but then they don't back it up. A professor says, being in research, I'm afraid that my future profession as a tenured professor is in jeopardy. I think the college campus is going to fundamentally change because of COVID-19, where I may have to switch my career paths to industry. So, I mean, we got a lot of comments from that, from professors that are kind of afraid about the business model of higher education. And I think we need a lot of really talented professors in research, don't get me wrong, but I think that this crisis is going to expose some of the university expenses as being somewhat unnecessarily high, right? And so that's definitely going to flow through to professors at some point. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that a little bit of that's overblown. Like, I think that you're still going to have the traditional model. I think that people are still going to want their kids to go to college to have that formative experience because they had that experience. And I think that's a pretty sticky thing. Yes, there will be changes, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think. This lawyer says, I'm primarily a real estate attorney. I'm concerned what will happen to real estate with the amount of people being laid off. We have seen a lot of deals start to get canceled or denied at an alarming rate. So again, I think that the economic panic that we would have seen during the worst of it in late March would have been a lot worse if you'd been seeing a lot of real estate transactions happening too. Because a lot of people kind of like don't think about their homes like they think about the stock market. Like the price of your home changes every single day. The only difference between the price of your home and the price of your retirement or the, you know, stocks is just how frequently you're made aware of the price of those assets. So for example, if you don't have a brokerage account and you don't pay attention to it at all, most people get their retirement plan statements quarterly. You know, I get a call usually from my mom because she'll see her retirement account, you know, went down a bunch or went up a bunch. And so she'll tell me, oh, wow, it went down a whole lot. Well, that's because she pays attention like once a quarter when she gets her retirement statement. Now, imagine with a house, there was nobody selling their houses really during COVID. I mean, it wasn't a lot of property changing hands. If you had seen property changing hands when the stock market was down 30, 40%, I think you would have seen big discounts in a lot of houses that might have been sold. And I think that that would have freaked people out even more because then they realize, oh, shoot, I'm not as rich as I thought I was. And they kind of get more panicky, right? So we'll see. I mean, if we do really recover, then I don't really think the housing situation will be too much changed. I think we'll certainly see some drops in some areas of the country, but I don't think we would see a drastic decrease in real estate. But it really does depend on how fast we come out of this, because I think that real estate really has soared in the past few years, like price-wise, a lot of reasons for that. So certainly you could see a drop. It just depends on how fast this recession ends. That kind of answers the question of how bad real estate is going to be impacted, if at all. Physical therapist says, because of the shutdowns, I'm not able to take my board exam for PT, so I can't get my license, which means I can't work. I'm considering shifting my plan that I wanted to have of working in outpatient care, which is my preferred setting, but now I'm thinking maybe I should work in an acute care hospital, as it seems like those might be the only places hiring. So that was a really interesting smorgasbord of opinions or comments from people in different professions. Hopefully I mentioned yours, and we're going to mention a couple other different angles here as well. So I want to address some of the emotions out there right now. So we had a lot of anger, fear, just random comments in the survey that I thought were kind of interesting to read a few of those. And then also some more positive things that are happening too that I'll share after the angry part. So I'm going to do the downer stuff first, and then I'm going to do the more uplifting stuff closer to the end. And then I'm going to end the show today with talking about this proposal with a big consortium of higher education groups that could impact the CARES Act 2.0 when they eventually get ready to discuss that could affect your student loans. So I'm going to tell you kind of what my thoughts are on that. So first, this anger section of the show, I'm just going to read some of these comments. Again, this is other people's views, not necessarily my own, okay? But I just wanted to read a couple of these just so you can hear what people are thinking and saying. So this one person says, they need to cancel our student loan debt. They can take billions from the airline industry and give it to our loans. That would free us up to travel and spend the money supporting the travel industry. We need it. They do not. You know, a lot of anger. We got a lot of comments about like the other bailouts that other people are getting, and just people are really, there's a lot of emotions around that. I understand. I'll say personally that I would like to be able to choose from two or three different airlines instead of one at the end of this. And I think there's a lot of things that you can say. It's kind of like the 2008 bailouts. Like, it sucks that they happened. Don't get me wrong. It seems like historically that might have been the right thing to do at the time, right? So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like that with the airlines. Like, I don't like that they're bailing them out. But at the same time, if you didn't, you'd see a lot of bankruptcies, consolidation, and then you'd have like one or two big carriers again, and then you wouldn't really see much price competition. And so, you know, that's a long-term thing that could really cost you a lot of money if you like traveling, having a lot fewer places to choose from. So another person says, I would have qualified for the $1,200 stimulus in 2018. Not fair that others are qualifying, getting the check, and others are not, based off of filing our taxes in 2019 early. I would have been able to use this to pay down my student loan debt. So just a caution about that, you know, the stimulus check is really an advanced tax credit from your 2020 taxes. So it's going to be based off of what you're earning in 2020, whether or not you qualify. There will be some people that are going to get their stimulus check based off of what they earned in 2018 if they hadn't filed 2019. And then also the people that filed in 2019, they'll get that stimulus check, but then they might actually end up owing money because they actually will end up not qualifying for the stimulus based off of what they earned in 2020. Don't get too upset because they're going to recapture this money at some point, just maybe down the line. Another person says, COVID event makes me very nervous about spending money on anything, really. I mean, that's something we saw a lot in our survey. We asked, how much are you cutting your spending by? A lot of people are cutting their spending just enormously right now. Another person says, I think the biggest travesty in our cohort is that private lenders are doing almost nothing to help us out. Another comment, many attendings at my hospital have RVU-based income, are losing up to 60% of what they earn, but they're working the same number of hours under more hazardous conditions. There's no justice in this. Another comment, we wanted to try to get pregnant this year, but we're throwing any money we have into our emergency fund and have halted planning a family. It's heartbreaking, but probably for the better. I completely understand this. We've kind of tried to do family planning as well personally. And I think that I feel for you, that person that made that comment. Just kind of remember that finances are not the only thing in the world. You will make it work. There will never be a perfect time to have a kid. I mean, certainly make your own decision, but just don't let finances stress that decision. So especially if you have student loans, you know, family planning is actually something that should be completely unaffected by student loans. Easy for me to say, right? But we have the math and the numbers and like the consulting like experience to back that up and to explain why that is. So if you are struggling like with any kind of things like daycare, like feeling like you can't have a family, feeling like you can't, you know, some men and women are going to want to reduce their hours to be around their kids a little bit more. Like all those things are always possible. You know, I would just say that if this person hasn't gotten a consult from us, I think we could explain like why that's okay to like not have to view it that way. Another comment from a listener. Yes, we all got flooded. This is really actually kind of a funny one. They said, yeah, we all got flooded with the quote, we're here for you, unquote, emails. It doesn't actually mean anything. And they didn't actually do anything. that's really funny. Yeah. Everybody's like, yeah, it's good marketing to tell people we're here for you. And then as long as we don't have to back it up, that's the difference between accountability, right? That's what happens when you don't have accountability. People can just say something because it sounds good. Another comment. The country needs to figure out a way for people to get back to the workforce while practicing social distancing and health checks and precautions, because unemployment checks are not a way of life. I saw that sentiment again a lot more with people that had lost their incomes completely than people who had not. Another person says, really wish the government would have stepped in to help those of us who refinance federal loans to private. I wish they had too. I thought it was very unfair the way they did it. They did it the way they did it because they were rushing to get something done. I obviously didn't predict that they were going to do something like this. I don't really think anybody did. I'll say that my advice is becoming more conservative now with refinancing in general. I mean, I started off saying that if you have less than 2x your income in student loans and you work for a private sector employer, you know, then you should refinance. And then I made it more conservative because I realized just how good pay as you earn and filing separately and all these loopholes are. So then I was saying, well, no, 1.5x, you know, should be the new ratio instead of 2x. So if you owe less than 1.5x your income in student loan debt, then that's the ratio you have to beat in order to justify refinancing. Mm-hmm. Now that we have established the precedent that in a bad recession, the government's just going to pause things, you know, just across the board. I mean, income-based repayment, you can recalculate your student loan. I mean, apparently that's something that I think the next time we have a bad recession, that's certainly going to be on the table to pause student loans again and pause the interest again. So I think that now I'm telling people, if you have student loans that are lower than your earnings and you have an emergency fund, then you can refinance if you're in the private sector. So that's a lot more conservative. And I think that, you know, refinancing at the end of this is still going to be a thing. The likelihood that this is going to be a recurring event is very low, in the sense of, you know, this is a black swan event. And you might say, well, we had one of those 10 years ago, so it seems like we're going to have one of those every 10 years. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, you're going to have these recessions, these weird events that are going to impact things, but it's not going to impact your long-term strategy all that much. So I just want to encourage you in that way, that the plan that you have for your student loans, if you've made your own plan or you made a plan with us, I hope it's one of the two, that you have a plan. But that doesn't change just because something weird happens in the economy. The tactics change, right? That's the difference between tactics and strategy. A tactic is like some sort of specific thing you're going to do that doesn't impact like the long-term plan. So there's a lot of tactical stuff you can do. Like I've mentioned, requesting the refund for payments made after March 13th, making sure you're still consolidating if you are a recent graduate to take advantage of the faster credit for income-driven programs, making sure you're filing your taxes the right way. There's all these tactical things you can do right now, in addition to knowing that the long-term strategy doesn't really get changed that much. A couple more comments. This is kind of a little bit of a random one that I didn't think about. I thought it would be kind of funny to share it with you. They're not funny, but interesting. This person says, we were in the middle of a home purchase and the closing got messed up because the seller can't empty the belongings out of their house because no donation centers are taking any donations. I didn't think about that. We had some stuff that I was supposed to donate from this like drive that we did from our church, and I donated most of it, but then there was a couple straggler things that came in and I was going to donate it. And then I was like, shoot, the Goodwill place down from my house, like they're not able to accept anything right now. Like that's, that risk reward doesn't compute. So I guess everybody's throwing all that stuff in the trash now. I don't know. That's just really fascinating. I mean, with all the uncertainty, if I wanted to sell my house and I had somebody that was going to buy it, you know, and I was worried about not being able to give any of it to a donation center. I mean, this pretty terrible, but like, I would probably just throw it all away. I mean, cause you're talking about the true value of things. Like this is kind of a off topic thing, but like my dad always thinks that his stuff is worth way more than it actually is. And I think most of us think this, like, so he'll show me like a pair of jeans from like the 1980s and I'll be like, this is a $200 pair of jeans. It's like, no, it's a $5 pair of jeans, because you have to look at the market value, not of what the personal value that you think it's worth or what you paid on it. Like that's why assets depreciate, is because something might be worth a lot less than what you initially paid for it. That's why people hold on to things, make bad decisions, because of this like anchoring bias that exists. I don't know. I think that was kind of an interesting comment. Like I didn't think about people's home sales getting held up because Goodwill's closed, but that was an interesting one. Another person says, this virus may cause a young dentist and his wife to be almost 30 and living at home with our parents. Yikes. That's what they said. Another person says, I would like to see the government use this crisis as an opportunity to reach out to students and permanently decrease the interest on student loans. There is a comment I'll make later about that. But first, some more positive feelings, some more positive things that you said in the survey about your coronavirus stories. One person says, we closed in our house at the end of March and we cut back our spending, and this has actually benefited us greatly. Besides not eating out and not doing some social activities with our kids and going to play gyms, I feel like our current financial situation is something that we could maintain going forward. It's helpful that we're not paying student loans because we qualify for PSLF and we don't have daycare expenses. I mean, that was interesting. I mean, a lot of people don't have anywhere to spend their money and they're still getting paid something. And if that's you, I mean, you're kind of maybe in better shape than previously financially. You're not in better shape, you know, from your quality of life, obviously, but financially you might be better off in some ways. One person says, our local symphony employs us and rehired all of us because they got a small business loan. Yay. Another person says, on the positive side, what I used to spend in restaurants, bars, and just out and about in general, I'm now eating at home and spending it on groceries, and I might be saving money and having better health. And another person says, I paid my hairdresser even though I didn't get a haircut, and I try to order from a local restaurant at least once a week. That's a great thing. And thank you to that person that is trying to support their local businesses and their people and their lives. I would just suggest that in addition to paying for that haircut, that you should help that hairdresser apply for the PPP with PayPal, right? I think that's what I'm trying to do. Is there's this like sandwich shop that I really like to go to. I'm trying to help that guy make sure he's applied to the PPP so he can stay open, right? Like any information that you have, just try to share it out there with people, because at the end of the day, like getting that meal was a wonderful thing. Like paying for something that you might not be using, like daycare, is a wonderful thing to support the workers. But also like make sure that they're taking advantage of the government stimulus programs, which are a way bigger deal than what you can personally provide. Another person says, I just closed in a home yesterday. Yes, I bought a house in a pandemic. Also bought 5,000 in airline and cruise stocks. That's interesting. Different comment. After learning about financial independence through the Choose Five podcast and J.L. Collins' A Simple Path to Wealth, I feel like this event is a black swan event, and it's actually a good thing financially because we are stable young investors and can buy more stocks at a discount. So that's true from a pure financial sense. Is really bad times like this are where you make most of your money, because if you're able to invest during times like this because you have stable incomes, for the people that do have stable incomes, that is a huge, huge positive change that's happening for your finances long term, because you're buying stocks at a deep discount. So you're buying a lot more than you would otherwise be able to buy for the same price. And so you're going to own more shares of American companies that are going to provide more dividends and more interest long term and capital gains than you would otherwise be able to buy. So that's a correct statement, as even though it's not obviously focused on the tragedies that are happening. This person says, I was focusing too much on my career and my retirement savings and not enjoying my family in the present. I will be changing the way I approach my career and prioritizing family when I return to work. I'm grateful that I've been forced to push pause and reevaluate things. That is a sentiment that really, I think, is a wonderful thing. A lot of people, myself included, are realizing what's really important in all of this. And it doesn't necessarily minimize the economic and financial pain and the health pain for some of the people out there who've lost loved ones or worried about loved ones. But it definitely reminds you, again, what's really important. A couple more funny things. This person goes, I asked the question about toilet paper, how much toilet paper you have. And some of the people were a little bit afraid to respond and out themselves. This person's comment, they said, I just want to clarify. Okay. I just want to clarify that although I have 3 to 4 weeks of toilet paper, I'm not a hoarder. We just buy in bulk. I thought that was kind of funny. Another person said, my entertainment spending has decreased because ... shelter in place. I'm a social drinker, got alcohol in the house, but I don't drink at home unless someone's drinking with me physically. None of this Zoom party blank. I got a kick out of that one. Another person commented, I'm spending, this is all caps, a lot more on alcohol. You know, hopefully everybody's doing okay. If you are, if you do have a problem, hopefully you'll have, you know, someone to support you, right? But, you know, I'm going to be honest. I think I've been probably having a little bit more red wine lately too. the occasional glass of whiskey on the rocks. I mean, it's been a stressful time, right? So feel free to enjoy a little bit of imbibing, but you know, definitely be careful and seek out support people if you are going through troubles. So last part of today's podcast, I just want to talk about, there was this letter that got sent to Congress by a huge number of higher education institutions that are proposing big changes to the CARES Act, or basically extensions to the CARES Act. So they had a list of demands, and this is really the who's who of like American Association of Universities, Association of Community Colleges, Financial Aid Administrator, National Association. They want to see Congress expand the CARES Act and extend it, the zero interest, zero payments, to June 2021. So I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but this is what they want. They want it to be extended to June 2021. And they also want lower interest rates. So they were talking about, well, 7% interest is unconscionably high. We propose that the government charge 1.5%. I asked the question to our Facebook group. I said, what do you think about this? And people were wildly in favor of it on average. You know, I think that we really advocated hard for you all in this last round of the CARES Act, because I was very, very concerned about them not giving credit to people for forgiveness programs during this time, especially like healthcare workers that are on the front lines of this. And so we pushed really hard for that against our own economic self-interest, right? Because I mean, this has been brutal for us. I'm just going to be honest with you. The consulting business is relatively unchanged. I mean, that seems to be, people still are still wanting plans for their student loans and just plans for financial independence with student loans. We're still having tons of those conversations. But the advertising revenue of our business, you know, which the cashback bonuses for refinancing, that's a significant part of our business. A lot of that's gone because people with private loans are still refinancing, but people not with federal loans obviously should not be refinancing. So if they extended it, I'm just giving you, you know, full disclosure here. If they extended it to June 2021, I mean, that would be absolute disaster for our business. So, you know, just full disclosure there, that could theoretically color my opinion. I recognize that that would help a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad, you know, I'm going to be glad for people if it passes for you, because it'll help you and it'll help you save money. But I do want to just kind of briefly mention there could be some unintended consequences of these kind of things. So usually, like when I was studying economics, you say like on one hand, on the other hand, right? There's trade-offs for everything. And so I think that colleges and universities are scared out of their minds right now because they're realizing that this idea that they can just perpetually raise prices forever, now that people are doing online classes and there's questions about whether or not people are going to be able to come back on campus in September, in the fall, and they're terrified. They're terrified they're not going to be able to continue their extremely profitable way of life that has paid the bills for so many of their schools, allowed their higher-ups to be earning so much money. I'm not saying that there's not positive results from that. Like, there's obviously a lot of economic activity. People have jobs. A lot of communities rely on colleges and universities for their economies. So I get all that, right? I'm just saying that they're proposing 1.5% interest rates and they're proposing extending the paused payments until June of 2021 because colleges and universities are scared out of their minds about being asked to lower their prices. And that's the thing. It's kind of like this distract you kind of thing. I don't want to be too political, but that's like a common theme in politics, right? Is like distract everybody, you know, with something that kind of seems like a good idea, right? I think that that's kind of what I kind of think about for that. Like, yeah, I would provide short-term relief, but is it going to provide long-term relief? So if they lower the any policy that would lower student loan interest, that would be a great idea if you have debt already, right? If you already have debt and they do federal student loan refinancing, that is going to be a great thing for you. But for the people that come after you, if you lower student loan interest to 3%, the universities don't care what interest is on the student loans. They want it to be as low as possible. And why is that? It's not because that they care for the economic health of their students. If they did, they would charge a lot lower prices for their tuition. They care because they know that if you're paying 3% for your interest on your student loans, they can charge you a lot more. I just hope that when we're talking about this, that any policies that extend the CARES Act or make it even more generous or something like that, I really hope that some market pressure is brought to bear on these universities, because I think that it is freaking ridiculous that a dentist would be asked to borrow 4 or 5 times what their income is out of school for student loan debt. That would never happen if they capped borrowing for student loans. In the UK, in Australia, in other countries that have income-driven repayment options, they cap tuition or they cap the amount that you can borrow under these programs. Why? It's because if you're paying a percentage of your income and there's no limit on the amount of borrowing, then obviously schools figure that out and they realize that they can just raise tuition to the moon because there's no pushback at all and there's nothing preventing them from doing that. And so far, schools have succeeded in not being regulated. I think that universities at banks needed to be regulated after 2008. Universities need to be regulated in a big way. So I'll monitor this for you. I'll tell you what was going on with the round two of the CARES Act and the potential renegotiation of some of those things. I would say, like, honestly, I think it's a greater than 50-50 chance that it gets extended longer than September the 30th, just because of the fact that you're coming up on an election year. I don't think that Congress and the Senate and Trump want the student loan interest to restart and payments to restart for 44 million people, or, you know, technically 39 million or whatever the people that actually qualified for this. They don't want that to start up right before the election, right? They can help it. I think that you might see some strange allies in this CARES Act 2.0 that might agree to some stuff they would normally not agree to because they're afraid of that. But we'll keep you informed and we'll let you know no matter what happens. And, you know, if they do extend it to, I don't know, forever for this student loan interest pause, I mean, maybe eventually you'll have to figure out your student loans again. So we'll probably try to keep as many people employed as we possibly can. You know, so I'm just being vulnerable with you right now because it's been really, really hard. At the end of the day, we're here to serve you. If student loans are not a problem anymore, student loan planner shouldn't exist. Or if it does exist, it should exist more as like a financial independence, like how do you help people live their best life kind of thing. So that's more of like a financial independence blog, like a maybe a financial planning firm kind of thing. So that would be a great thing if student loans were not a problem anymore. I think they probably, unfortunately, will be a problem. So we're going to just try to survive like everybody else and try to just keep doing things for you, try to keep pumping out content for you, try to keep advocating for you, even when it's against our own economic self-interest, because that's kind of the expectations that I think that I should have for myself and what you deserve. if you do need a plan for your student loans, if you have more time than you ever had before, you've been putting this off, you know that there's a lot of these weird moving parts with the CARES Act and you want to make sure you get it right. Maybe you're a recent graduate that knows they need to consolidate their loans, but they're kind of afraid to do that on their own. You know, we can help with all those things. So go to studentloanplanner.com/help if you want to get a plan for your student loans. We would love to help you. And again, those conversations we're having are not just student loans. We talk about a lot of things. So it's really kind of a comprehensive look at what your future can look like if you really have a clear plan. And then the other thing I'll tell you is if you have private student loans, now is actually a good time to be applying for only private student loans for refinancing. So if you refinance like in February and March, you're probably not going to find better rates than that period of time. But I will say that some of the major lenders, like when the financial crisis or the stock market crisis hit hard, a lot of them just pulled the ladders up. Nobody was getting low rates. Now they're starting to lower those ladders back down because the stock market's been somewhat stable. And so I think you're seeing people kind of calm down a little bit, you know, private lenders. So if you do have kind of a higher interest rate on your private loans, or you're looking to extend your term, maybe take it from a 10-year to a 20-year to relieve pressure on your cash flow, that would be a good thing to do if you have private loans only. So go to studentloanplanner.com/refi, R-E-F-I, for that. And please, if you have benefited from our material, if we've saved you money, please tell somebody about this podcast. It's free. It makes me motivated to release more of them. It's going to help us a lot, keeping the business around, keeping the lights on until this terrible economic time and this terrible health crisis hopefully passes at some point. So just want to encourage you, the listener that talked about, you know, all the alcohol they're buying, just take it easy. Okay. Don't go too crazy. You never know. You might have your governor just randomly decide to reopen the state and then you have to go show up to work and you don't want to be drunk. I'm just joking around. Hopefully that gave you a chuckle. So thank you so much for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. I'll see you next week.